Stay tuned for your 3CR podcast, featuring interviews from Bundles Fire Radio Show. 3CR is an independent community radio station in Fitzroy, Victoria, on the unceded lands of the Kulin Nation. For more information, go to www.3cr.org.au. Stick with us, folks. I've got Robert Eckington on the line from Noongar Land over in the west there. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Rob. How are you going?
Hey, good to hear from you, brother. Finally,
yeah, you too.
Finally got you on, mate.
Yes, we've been really busy the last few months, Rob. But, yeah, look, I'm really happy to be back on the radio station with you, and want to, you know, give a big kaya and a shout-out to all the Koori mob that listen into the station, Rob. And, yeah, it's really good to be back on with you.
Thanks, Ashley, brother. You know, what I was thinking of when I was, I think I should talk to you, was something about, it was about the prisons. And that saying they seem to be blocking us from going in there. Is that an issue for you over there at the moment?
Yes, well, look, we entered into a 12-month contract with Bankshear Hill Juvenile Detention Centre here in Perth, myself, Selena, and our young grandson, Rob, also, who you know, Robbie, is
Ickeby.
Young Rob. Ickeby's a nephew.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, yeah, and they do work in Bankshear Hill. But look, myself, Selena, we were contracted to do a major delivery of an intensified, what they call, cultural program over a two-week period during each holiday break. So we were, I think, contracted to do 9 weeks thereabouts, a week leading into the actual program itself. So what happened was we were in there. We did right through the first three blocks. We'd commenced the last block of the program. And we were asked to also deliver it in Unit 18, which most people would know as being the really notorious juvenile section of the adult prison in Perth here, Casuarina Prison. And they put what they say are the more difficult young juveniles in Unit 18, young ones that are, actively involved in, heading the riots, I suppose, Rob, and other stuff in terms of property damage and, as they would put it, assault on the custodial officers, etc. They'd transfer those young fellas to Unit 18. And now, Unit 18 is a whole place on its own. It's a very chronic situation when it comes to juvenile incarceration and also the juvenile justice system. So anyway, myself and Selena, we ran the program. We're only into the last block of the whole contract before it expired in terms of its own, evolution in the sense of the 12 months. So I think we had about 3 days to go, Rob, and an incident happened in the room at Bankshear Hill with the custodial officers. And Selena had been insulted, on the borderline of assaulted, in terms of issues that we were addressing within the delivery of the program, the subject matter as well. And we would obviously talk about the colonial process of the country and what happened during the colonisation of our land, and that incorporated the massacres and the poisoning of water holes, and then of course the 1905 Native Welfare Act. We would talk to the young people about the stolen generations, of course, and the ingrained trauma that stemmed from the stolen generation policies, which included obviously issues dealing with domestic violence, issues dealing with substance abuse, incarceration. And what we found, Rob, in the end there, that truth-telling, especially as it is to the young people in juvenile detention, and we needed to do that in order to show them ways through colonisation and how they've ended up in the circumstances in their life that they have in terms of being locked up in in places like Bankshear Hill, right across the country.
Well, I don't think they'd really like that idea too
that's what I'm getting to. Now, some of these kids in Bankshear Hill are actually 10 years old. That's the minimum age in which they can imprison, young children here in WA. So, look, what we found with the truth-telling aspect of our program, and Dumbutung, Rob, when we talk about issues, we talk about the issues relate in contemporary challenges of our people to the policies of, again, colonisation and genocide in this country. So that truth, and as we were telling it, we saw some pent up, I suppose you call it anger, and confusion with the custodial officers. And the same officers that were in Bagshi Hill where this incident happened were also at Unit 18 the week before. So, you know, we were privy, if you like, but we saw this sort of pent-up anger in terms of that truth-telling. So, you know, it got to a point in Bagshi Hill where we were actually delivering the program to the young women, to the girls. And one young girl got triggered, I would say, by some of the issue, particularly the audio visuals that we were showing. And anyway, she went to the door to get out, and I said to Selena, well, look, Selena, comfort the young girl, go and see if she's okay, and as we do. And then what happened, Rob, in short, and in a nutshell, was that girl was taken out of the room, and then the major door to the room where we were delivering the program was slam locked. So behind those locked doors, it was just myself, Selena, our grandson, Rob, and five of the girls who were the detainees in Bagshi Hill. So there, an incident happened in regards to the custodial officers having this pent-up anger that they unleashed really on Selena. And I had to go from where I was down to make sure my wife was okay and she was safe. This is the level it escalated to. And, look, when I got there, they had, you know, accused us of triggering the girls, not having any backup to support their safety and their social well-being in there. And the way in which they did that was pretty much way out of order. So I had to go down, make sure Selena was safe and first and foremost, because I could see one of the male officers right up in her face asking her about what racism meant to her. And I said, no, hang on, Selena, you don't answer that. You're a respected female elder, senior elder in our community. You've been through racism your whole life. You don't need to justify how racism's affected your life or what you think about racism to a custodial officer here. Their only job is to bring these young people, handcuffed as they do, and at times near shackled, into the delivery room and then to take them back. I said, you don't need to be answerable to this, Selena. So anyway, we pulled back. But by this time, Rob, the tensions were extreme. And then all of a sudden, obviously, they've rang the security buzzers and the superintendent, the deputy superintendent have all rushed down into the room. So there was a real issue at hand. But yeah, one of the issues at hand really was this pent-up anger was manifested into a release of that onto our program, but particularly our staff. So, you know, when you look at truth-telling, and this is what we're talking about here, is truth-telling. And we know that it's a national or a federal idealism that's pushed through reconciliation, which is, you know, a statement that came, as they say, from the heart of Uluru. And truth-telling is important, Rob, in terms of reconciliation, for the better interests of reconciliation. And that's how in South Africa, if you remember, you had, you know, great men of stature like Mandela, Bishop Tutu. They set that process in terms of reconciliation can't be achieved without truth-telling being at the basis of that.
That's what the difference was, Rob, with South Africa's... They had a thing called truth and reconciliation process. Australia just had a thing called reconciliation. There was no truth involved.
And what we found, Rob, with, and I heard Mulindari McCarthy just talking, I think, the other day, and I think it's come from the attack on camp sovereignty and another issue she manifested with that. However, she was talking about the importance of truth-telling in this country. But look, I've been at that helm way before truth-telling was a political theme in this country attached to reconciliation. When we were young, we never ever heard the word reconciliation, Rob.
No.
Never heard it until maybe the last 10, 15 years. So look, given that, these custodial officers in moments shattered that whole international movement and that of Australia in terms of reconciliation of colonised countries, they smashed and shattered that in 30 seconds inside Bankshear Hill Detention Centre. Okay. That was one of the major issues in which happened on that day.
Yeah, no, that's why I wanted to talk to you, Rob, because I knew something was brewing over there, and you know, I felt for you, because something else happened in South Australia at the same time with Sumner, Major Sumner fella. Something very similar happened to him, because he'd been running programs in the jails for a long time, and all of a sudden the door slammed.
Yeah, no, I know him well. I should, I'll call him and have a talk with Sumner.
Yeah, and the other thing is, we here at 3CR, we have a thing called Beyond the Bars, and you know, I've been to every prison across Victoria, in the right way, not as a
yeah, of course.
And I know how you got to step through all that, you know. It's you don't, if you're you got to be careful what you say to these fellows, because they you can know that it'll inflame the situation. You got to be very careful, and I make sure I've got the support of the senior people in those prisons.
Oh yeah, no, Rob,
because these guys who are actually doing the custodial business, you know, they're totally the wrong people to be in those situations, you know, and it's anyway.
Well, certainly the wrong people from our perspective, but certainly the right people from the system's perspective. You know, most prison guards in this country are made up of either ex-military, they're either ex-vets, and or, look, we know here in Western Australia, they've even, employed thugs, people with some really shady backgrounds, Rob, in terms of positions such as, you know, police officers, prison wardens, security guards. You know, they really employ the most ruthless people to whom they can screen, interview and place into them positions.
It seems very clear, Bruce.
Yeah, they very well know the type of nature, if you like, of the person they're employing, that are, you know, the guards or the wardens or the custodial officer over these, you know, incarcerated mobs, but particularly juvenile incarceration as well. And look, Rob, the job and the only job of those custodial officers during our program delivery, again, as I said, was to bring the kids into the program, which they did for near that whole 12 months, and then basically to take them back to their, cells,
yes,
their cell blocks thereafter. They had no right to make commentary. They had no right to definitely to bail Selena
absolutely,
up the way they
absolutely.
Did.
Yep. Do you get support from the wardens and the senior staff in those places, or they seem
to
get part?
Well, we did, Rob. Yeah, look, I was reporting to our committee at each meeting about the development of the program at Bankshear Hill and what was coming out of it, and the connection with the young men in particular was phenomenal. We have found ways to ice break into, you know, connections with them that were based at the end, Rob, on trust and respect. They felt really, really easy with the Dumbutung mob. Yeah. They felt, even some of them were opening up for the first time and talking about the most tragic circumstances of their young lives. And, you know, that was losing in front of them their parents through, you know, drug overdoses, the most, you know, severe domestic violence you could imagine, Rob.
Yeah.
All of that stuff. And look, it took a while for us to connect to them in that sense of where they felt that, you know, that connection. And we went in there also at the request of the Aboriginal Management Unit, and we did days up on what they call the hill. It's a small gathering yarning area in Bankshear Hill. And we did a loss and grief day with the young men and women just after the second suicide in Unit 18, which is still Bankshear Hill. So we spent that whole Father's Day there. We had also gone in and spoken to the young men, in particular, inside the intensive security units. And also we encompass Unit 18 in terms of our connection with that system at that time. And that was never part of the contract. So we were also, I was sitting on release team meetings with, you know, the Wodgila staff of Bankshear when certain young men were released. So our role was used even much further than just within delivering the program. And that also really paved the way for this sort of respect that and trust that came between ourselves and the detainees in the institution, Rob. So look,
that
I was
may
happy
have
with
been
all
too, becoming too successful your program, Boris.
Well,
it?
That there, Rob. But look, also the custodial officers, right up to this last block delivery, were very connected to the program. They were even participating in the hands-on activities that we also included within the program, which was, you know, teaching the young people art inside Banksia Hill. I would, and you would know, Rob, I've done watercolour landscapes for many, many years in my life, paper bark paintings.
Absolutely.
So I was teaching them that healing process of art and art as a therapy. And look, you know, that was creating paths of strong connections with us, but also the custodial officers, they were actually participating in that hands-on part of the program. Now,
well, they wouldn't know much about the true history either, about the country as themselves.
Oh, they know nothing, Rob. And what the frightening part of this really was, when you started to get up to the older young men in Banksia Hill, and we're talking now, what, say, 16, 17, what really shocked me was also, and look, probably because I've worked in the area of, you know, Aboriginal affairs at a community grassroots level for a long, long time, I sort of try to think back. When I think back on my life at the same ages as these young boys, look, it starts to really have an impact on how little the system, education department in particular, and even within our own families, had we lost that connection to Aboriginal cultural knowledge, but also historical and political knowledge as well, Rob.
Yeah.
So when you're going in there, you really have to start off at the very basics in terms of discussion in regards to our history, because, you know, we teach history as well from the tongue of the vanquished, not that of the victor. So, you know, and you don't need to be an academic to do this, Rob. So, you know, I'd start to think back at where I was at the ages of these young boys and probably knew not much more or even less than what they know. So it's an interesting transition, if you like, of, you know, an expectation of our young people, they should know this, they should know that. However, we put a bit of placement of an unrealistic expectation on them, because like our lives when we were young, Rob, you know, we knew very little of our culture.
Exactly.
And our people. We needed to evolve into, again, connecting with oral histories. And I was only thinking this morning before the phone rang with Michaela that some of my greatest processes of learning about the issues that we need to teach our young people today, I didn't properly access in my life until the mid-30s. And I remember not long ago, I saw and read a post of your mother's on Facebook, and it was an incredible post. I think about Fitzroy and the issues of the hard style of life for Koori's at that period. And I could relate to that because that, in working in East Perth, same sort of circumstances as Fitzroy and, you know, suburbs in the inner city of Melbourne. That's where, and my first learning really came from in terms of our people, the struggle, the resistance. And that was also inclusive of the NAHO movement at the time, which was the National Aboriginal and Islander Health Organisation. And your mother used to be one of the NAHO members. And that's where I first met your mum. And I met people also like Dennis Walker from Queensland. And, you know, I learned.
Did you know Bruce?
From the
Bruce
way
McGuinness?
I saw him operate. Bruce McGuinness would wait at the airport for me arriving into, I remember, the big conferences that were in Sydney.
That's where I met you too, Rob.
Well, Robbie, I would bring in bags of boomerangs, my own artwork at that time, carvings. And it was the first, really, in a lot of ways, the transitioning of Aboriginal culture material from, and Dumbartung was obviously connected with the Western Desert Block, the Kimberley, through the One Arm Point communities. So as that materials came into Dumbartung, Rob, I was actually distributing that material through the NAHO structures.
Oh, fantastic.
So, Bruce,
yes, cool.
So I had a good and a very strong connection with Bruce McGuinness.
Yeah.
I knew Bruce McGuinness well. And I think last time we were in Melbourne, we visited your mum's place and she gave us that most incredible Kylie or boomerang from Lake Eyre. And that has got its place of pride in our collections. But also, you know, I remember Gary Foley being at their meetings, Naomi Mayers from the Redfern Medical Service, who was one of the sapphires when they went into the Vietnam War. First met Shane Houston, also Charlie Perkins. I remember him speaking. But one of the Wajala fellas that impressed me at those meetings, Rob, in them days, was a man called Fred Hollows, who was an eye specialist.
Yes. Trachoma.
Yeah, and he did a lot of work with our mob, and also Dr. Bill Roberts and people like that. So that was my learning board, really.
Yeah, me too. Exactly, Rob.
In my life, Rob.
I went to school and I didn't learn anything there, but since I came out, I started to learn for all those people you just mentioned right there. That's when I started to learn something. You know?
Sure.
So I can hear what you're saying, brother.
Mm.
So, you know, and it's scary for the non-Aboriginal people, this truth, you know. So that's why they're...
Absolutely it is.
That's why they're trying to block us, brothers, because it's, you know, it's all of that, well, you know. You know, why hasn't this education happened in the education system? Who's responsible for this ignorance in this country and the racism? It's the institutions, it's the government, it's the judiciary, it's the media and the education system. Those things could do a lot to, you know, eliminate all those things.
No, absolutely, Rob, for sure. I think the first emphasis of priority I put on truth-telling is that, you know, Dumbarton targets, really, our young people in terms of this truth-telling process now. And I think there lays a greater outcome, Rob, than trying to... Look, there's a lot of white people in this country that I would say would be in a position of, you know, not knowing something, and with the truth-telling process they can conclude and then maybe change their consciousness in terms of the way they think. But this country is made up of such a bedrock of hardcore racism.
And
that
lies.
Is now showing its ugly faces all around this country, but also globally. So there is a movement of conflictuation now happening between what they call the woke culture and then, of course, that of the conservative right wing. And I think there lays this changing of the guards, if you like, or, you know, whatever comes about from the world wars that we're, you know, watching every night on our television screens, genocide being played out with a turn of a button. I think that, you know, given this truth-telling and the process of it, I think the greater outcome is to see the enlightenment on the faces of our young people when you free their mindsets at things that were confusing them as young Aboriginal people at how and why we're in the positions of challenges we are today. So truth-telling to our own young people, I see their spirits light up when they can connect to the very nature of the stories, as they're told, though, Rob, with emotion and conviction to them, and that truth is revealed. Oh, what I found in my life is our young people's eyes, you know, open, and you know, I can see their spirit come alive. And when you connect them then with that truth-telling, and then in the collectives at Dumbarton, like the ancient artifacts that we have in our Kayana collections and the old Noongar objects that predate colonisation, and they've got their hands on those objects of their old people as you're telling them the truths of what happened in this country through genocide and colonialism and what happened during the 1905 Native Welfare Acts, they then can start to join dots, Rob, that are far more important in their development as young Aboriginal people than we'd ever get out of white people in this country.
It makes it all worthwhile, bro. So that's
makes it worthwhile, Robbie.
And truth and education, they're our weapons in this country. And
absolutely.
That, you know, it's coming home to roost now, bros. And, you know, we're just about out of time.
Mm.
Just want to give my love to Selena and all your family and keep up the good work, bros. And I hope it... what's the future look like for you in regards to this business going into the prisons?
Well, we've got the complaint lodged. We got a response from the complaint, which we tabled last night at our AGM. Dumbarton had its AGM last night.
Okay.
And people were angry. They would not accept the response from the Ministry of Justice. So the committee and our membership has given our management, which is, of course, myself and Selena, all the right and the support to fight this right through. So we do release a pretty big story in the National Indigenous Times early next week, and then we're going to build it up from there, Rob. And today, really, is the first time that we've spoken publicly through your radio station in terms of allowing people to know what the process of Dumbarton and this Ministry of Justice complaint is. But look, yesterday we lodged all copies of the complaint with the state, ministers, and also Mullandary McCarthy has been up on the issue, and she knows exactly what's happening between Dumbutung and the Ministry of Justice. But I just wanted to, if I could, Rob, give a shout out, if you like, or an acknowledgement to a young nephew who's in Melbourne. He's lived there for a long, long time. And he does all the plates for the Tribal Fires podcasts, actually.
Okay.
And puts all the photo images together for when we release the episode. So I want to give a shout out to Brad Anderson. Brad is a Noongar Yamaji fella from WA. And I've been connected with him since that time I came to Melbourne, Robbie, and spoke with you up outside Parliament House. I think it was an Australia Day rally, but just as COVID hit the country.
Ah, deadly, brother. Thanks heaps, Bruce. We'll catch up again soon, mate.
Yeah, and make this one will be for Brad. Yeah, good on you, Robbie.
All right, mate. We'll make this a regular gig. All right, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks, Robbie.
All right, mate. Have a good day.
Yep.
See ya.
Yeah, bye now.
Bye. Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. To listen to a full audio of Bunjil's Fire radio show, a historically informed critical analysis of Aboriginal affairs and the ongoing political movement for land rights, treaty, sovereignty and the cessation of genocide, go to 3cr.org.au/Bunjil's Fire. If you want to support independent black media on 3CR, please go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.